You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny, well, not sunny, it's rainy Cocoa, Florida today. Oh. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're heard on the World Wide Web. That's everywhere, right. Miss Ellen.
That's right. 1510 WWBC, you can hit that listen live button right there on the .com, and you'll get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we put all of the archives of our shows right there on 1510wwbc.com under the On Demand. We are on the air each and every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m., so you'll find us under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then, of course, on all the social medias as well, we post the pictures and the downloadable MP3s of the show for everyone. And we've had over 15 years worth of fantastic guests and great business owners and authors and philanthropists and people that are running for office. You've done such a great job of getting fantastic guests every single week, Sita.
We have a lot of friends.
We do.
Worldwide friends.
We do. And we do consider everybody friends. It's like, you know, once they're on the show, it's like we stay connected with people. So it's so cool.
So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends this morning, on Mondays, every Monday for the last 14 years, we have been here in this studio talking to people about what we call kitchen table topics. We heat up the airwaves with folks that want to talk about whatever their platform is. And we are very happy that they choose our show to come here and sit with us in a fun, unscripted, interesting, and highly educational manner and learn something. I know I learn a lot of stuff.
Every week.
Every week. So Ellen O'Neill is my co-host. She's been with me for 14 years. Danny Whiting runs our board. And Ali Tamber is also filling in as a co-host at times. And she's our resident guest that comes every Monday and keeps us company. And what an awesome company she is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
1 year I've been here.
So while we wait for our guests to call in, Ellen, let me just tell our listeners a little bit about who's calling in today. And hopefully, there we go. So our show today, I decided to have a show about war and peace because there are people that really need to understand that when you wake up in the morning and you're breathing, it is the most beautiful gift to be able to open your two eyes and be able to see and give back to this wonderful world while we're on this earthly journey called life. And I decided to have two guests today. There's a lady that I met through my friend Jabine, who is a philanthropist. She is an author. She's also a peace activist, does a lot of stuff for the world or universe. Her name is Mitra Rapa. She's also Persian, like my husband. And our second guest is an award-winning military author. His name is Frank Dimith, and he will be joining us on the second segment to talk about his book, Of Vital Interest. And he just won a whole bunch of awards and things from the International Authors Association for his book. So he would be calling in the second segment. But before we go to a guest who's on the phone, Ellen, did you have a good weekend?
I had a fantastic weekend. And through the rain and the tropical disturbances and things that were going on, everyone else had a great time as well. We all kind of got together over the weekend, celebrated some birthdays. Of course, it's the first of August. It's hard to believe. I can't even believe how quickly this month has already arrived.
That's right. Allie, you had a good weekend?
I had a good weekend. I spent a little bit of it with Ellen one of the evenings. So we were out, we'll all hear the bands play and had company visit me from Alpharetta, Georgia. And so there was company and we just, last night I watched the storms come blowing through and that I like to see the wind blowing and all that kind of stuff anyway, so it's different.
Right, and I spend a lot of my weekend trying to figure out if I'm Indian. I mean, with the whole thing with Kamala Harris and the thing is that it always bothers me.
That's one thing
me.
I
like,
didn't do is watch
like
the news.
My grandson is white and Indian, so my son calls him out Windian, which with a W. You're not supposed to choose which part of your culture you're going to speak about or embrace or learn about. You know, my husband's Persian. I'm Indian. My children are married to Catholics. They love Jesus. My best friend is Jewish. I am the United Nations. And so for me, when I see a politician or just a person going after someone else for being black or brown or mixed or whatever, I'm like, dude, if you have a problem with that, when you pass away from this great planet and you go to God or whoever you go to, ask him, why did you make people brown and black? Because obviously some people just want people to be their color, right?
People.
So I'm like, the only way you're going to find that out is when you pass away and you go wherever you're going. But
it's unfortunate that we've dealt with it twice, because the Obamas unfortunately went through the same thing. You know, with them, everybody's trying to ask for his passport and his, you know, birth certificate to figure out.
Well, God
out
is
what,
love, right? I'm from the Caribbean, and God is love. And in the Caribbean, they say one love, one people. And with that, I think it'd be a great time to bring on our guest, Mitra. Mitra, her bio is extensive. She is an author of independent. Let me just have her talk, because she's been on shows. That as I was reading her bio and I saw where she was on, you know, Larry King and different morning shows in UCLA, and she was a keynote speaker, I'm in awe that I even got her to speak on our show. So, Mitra, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Sita. Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. So happy to be here with you and inviting me. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You know, you remind me a lot of so many of my friends that are now embracing yoga and meditation and utilizing the beautiful parks that we have and utilizing all the writings and the stories of the great poets and the great sages like Tulsi Das and, you know, verses in the Ramayana. You remind me so much of people in my family and friend circle. So I was in awe as I read that you're Persian, and you are from a long line of poets and authors and writers as well, correct?
Yes, my mother, who's passed away, she was a classical poet. She had four poetry books, and she came from a lineage of people who were poets, and also her father was a high master Sufi. So Sufis in Iran also, lots of them are always gravitated towards poetry and spiritual poetry. So yes, I come from a lineage of poets and mystics on my mother's side of the family. And on my father's side, my grandfather was also a poet.
Wow. Talk about spirituality running your veins. And you also, you sung in an award-winning film as well.
Yes, I also sing, and I sung in The Olive Harvest, which was a beautiful film made by a Palestinian wonderful man. And it was really a movie that really promoted peace. And I sang on Spartacus, the series Spartacus.
With Sheryl Crow, wow.
Yes, so that was a wonderful opportunity she gave me, yes. And you know, I try to sing causes or things that have significance to me. So I started out with Persian folk music, and I sing also Afghan music. And my specialty is chanting. And I intertwine it with my teachings. And even yesterday that I did a book event, I did a little chant during the meditation part. So it's part of me. Yes.
Yeah, you know, you would be a great person to sit with for Nowruz. I'm sure you have the best Persian New Year. So while I was doing the research for the show, of course, you know, I quickly glanced a little bit about the Iran-Iraq war and how many people died in that conflict. And it just broke my heart, because then I'm envisioning you know, all the people that had to leave the Middle East and flee, and how wonderful it is that your ancestors, you know, gave you something so wonderful that when you did leave, you brought it to us here in the United States. So talk a little bit about your family background and how that helped you, how that helped you to bring peace, not just to people around you, but to us here in the U.S.
Thank you so much. So actually, I spoke about this yesterday. I was raised in an American school. I went to an international school. So when I left Iran in 1978-79, I came here to finish my high school. My mother was a very, very courageous educator and a very powerful being. And she really believed that each person needs to find their own independence and stand on their own feet. And when I came, I was very young, so it was very hard for me to be away from family. And, you know, I learned a lot. I fell a lot. I got up a lot. And I slowly, very, very young, I slowly started my, basically my work of service. I'm a person who really believes in service. So I started my work. And now, decades later, I've been a teacher and author, and I do lots of mentoring. And I do it in the U.S., and I also do it in Iran, and for those in Afghanistan. I do go back periodically to Iran, and I do workshops there, especially for young women.
And I'm assuming it's well-received when you go back as well. There's no one that put barriers up for you. You're able to freely teach the ladies.
Yes, because also, you know, there is a lot of thirst in that part of the world for teachings and to feel more peaceful and create more mindfulness. So, yes, yeah, so I, like, for example, my new book that just came out 2 weeks ago, you know, The 11 Pillars of Self-Realization, Your Roadmap to Inner Peace, is my life's work of 40 years, and I'm going to be translating this in Iran soon. So whatever, you know, I think right now because of the internet, we do have all of us that platform to create a lot of positive messages that go throughout the world. As I see it, we're all in one tribe because we're all people living and we want to create a harmonious life while we're here. And the way to do it is to really begin with ourselves.
Well, and we have to choose peace, right? We have to choose peace because the conflict of war is just boiling over. It's out of control, and nobody knows how to put a stop to it. It's like it's all about control and power and money. And at some point, peace wouldn't bring you money per se by selling arms to other nations and ammunition and bombs and drones and things, but peace will bring such a calmness to our world and our people and all its cultures. So I know that in your new book, The 11 Pillars, you talk a little bit about peace. So tell our listening audience here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how does one sit down and figure out that peace is what I choose?
Well, I think, you know, it's a conscious choice. I think when you go through life and you're a little bit, have a little bit years under your belt, like you're 30 or 40 or whatever age you are, you see that there's a lot of outside turmoil that you have no control of. This is not only in the world, it's in your own life. For example, you go through a breakup, you go through a divorce, you go through heartache, you go through illness, you go through loss of job, loss of homes, your home can burn down. So those things are impermanent in life. The external forces are impermanent. What's permanent is the inside, and this is where we have control. So if you understand that if you develop, like if you tone certain muscles, giving one, patience is a big one. If you tone certain muscles, work on them, you will build your inner sanctuary. So it will become more peaceful. So your life will become more of meaning. So you will be joyful and in gratitude no matter what is going outside in our world. I will never forget this. I've stated it in my first book. I met a young man when I was very young. he had lost all his a lot of his family members, like 20 or 30 overnight, in a big devastation in the Middle East. And for 2 years, he was roaming around with his motorbike, and he was really not feeling well mentally. And he was like living and sleeping anywhere he could find. And my friends and I found out about him after 2 years, and there was such a peace with him. So one day we asked him, how can you be so peaceful? I mean, you lost 20 members of your family in an hour. How can a person who's young find that peace? He goes, I was angry for 2-3 years. And then I realized that my loved ones were not here. They wouldn't want me to live this life for them and for myself. So at that moment, I made a conscious decision to try to make my life better so I would find more joy being here and more peace.
Right.
And he really practiced that. He really became that. So that was such an example for me when I was 27.
It's such a life of love and joy and fulfillment. But you have also, in addition to advocating for so many things that you do, you also founded an all-girls middle school in an underserved, impoverished region in Iran. And I truly admire you for that, because knowing people from that part of the world, especially on the borders of Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iran, those, you know, we all talk about all lives matter. And we have so many people who are, you know, pro-child, pro-family, anti-abortion, anti-things like that. And I often wonder why people don't sit down and think one day that we are all connected. A human being suffering on the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iran and all these places, it's still a human being. It's still a mother with a child that doesn't have a blanket, doesn't have food, doesn't have water, doesn't have shelter. And you took that step to say that I am going to do something about it. Tell our listeners here, Mitra Rabah, a little bit about your journey into opening that school and why you thought that was a purpose that you wanted to fulfill.
Yeah, so I always wanted to do something for Iran and Afghanistan, because both of those countries, I mean, all the countries are dear to me, but those, you know, speak my mother tongue. So, through the years when I've gone to Iran, I have seen the anguish and the poverty. And when I was approached 3-4 years ago to come into terms with this beautiful organization who are a team of doctors and educators, who this is what they do, and they do it pro bono. And, you know, of course, the school, you have to raise money for it and everything. And I said, I would like to do this. And, you know, it just happened that they said this particular area needs an all-girls school. It serves 7 villages, and there'll be like 176 girls. And if the school is not built, these girls face a horrific future. They either go into drugs or prostitutions or runaways, and because their life, it just becomes horrendous. And it was a no-brainer for me. I didn't even think about it. I said, of course I will do it. And I, you know, through the help of so many amazing people, kind people, this was able to happen. And the school is now finished and opens in September. And, I hope I can do another one. And I think it comes down to, you know, when you have a spiritualness or mindfulness, that's your way of life. It's wonderful. But I think for me, I also love to be of service. I love to take an action to create a better way of life for someone if I am able to do that. And definitely, you know, those girls or the people in those regions don't have a voice.
Yeah.
And they don't have an education. And, you know, so while, you know, here so much goes to waste, we throw so much food away, we throw some clothes away, we throw so much iPhones away, all those things.
Yes.
Over there, they're fighting for their basic, very basic, of having electricity, of having water, of having just, you know, a toothbrush, seriously.
I know. And, you know, the thing is, by you doing that, and we all talk about education, when you when you educate women, children, people all over the world, we tend to reduce uncertainty. We promote dialogue, we promote communication, and we minimize misconceptions that people have of other people through dialogue and through communication. And I think your way of opening the school, in addition to everyone who's helping you to do it, it's absolutely phenomenal. Did you have any pushback through any governmental agencies? Like, was there any pushback here from the U.S. or the Iranian government to open the school for the girls?
No, you know what? I did it. I just helped the organization there. The organization did everything, so that everything they do is up to par and done well and organized. So I didn't get involved in any of the governmental aspects of it or the legal aspects of it. I was just there to, be one of the agents who did this. So, I think in many parts of the world, many even in our own backyard in the United States, there is so much poverty and there's such a need on many, many levels. And I always tell people, if you can't give money, give your time. And go mentor these young people. Go be there, show up for the elderly. Do those things, because we really underestimate how many people are alone or in need.
Yeah.
And
we all talk about finding our purpose in life, right? And true leaders unites people, bring out the best in them, and it helps the entire world when you could do that. And you strike me as one of those people that is a leader, and it's wonderful to have people such as myself follow you and learn from you. And I know that Ali and Ellen, my co-host here, they want to jump in and say something. Ali, go ahead.
I was curious about, is it a male-female issue with the female school? Did you feel pushback?
No, there's no male-female issue. In Iran, in the last 45, 50 years, there's the schools, not elementary, but in the higher middle schools, it's always separation of girls and boys. And actually, I originally was going to do a school for elementary, for girls and boys. But the need was bigger for an all-girls school, because in this particular area, there was not a middle school for the girls, so they would have nowhere to go.
So in your, Ellen wants to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, and I loved, I got a chance to kind of preview your book, basically like how to get a peaceful mind, which I think is so powerful and so needed right now, right, in our society. What is there like a workbook that goes with it?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, each chapter has exercises. So each chapter has, there's 11 pillars that I find are fundamental pillars, such as patience, such as wisdom, such as service. And at the end of each chapter, there are exercises. So you can do those exercises. So it's a book that encompasses a lot. And, anyone, they can get it from Amazon or wherever they want. And the purpose of this is like to be a roadmap for each person.
I was kind of looking at the previews. So kudos to creating a guide that we all need.
Yeah.
because that peaceful mind gets us through so many things, and there's so much stress that makes us sick. This is a great roadmap. So congratulations.
So
thank you.
So Midra, as you unveil the human spirit, right? And we see this spiritual evolution taking place. How do we package and sell and message this to so many people who wake up every day, and even though they open their beautiful eyes to see the gift that God has given us, which is his planet, the flowers? You know, my husband loves poetry and Omar Khayyam, and he loves reading poetry from Iranian poets as well, and he would see beautiful things in where you walk, and he sees beautiful things in the birds, and he feeds animals, And I often wonder what happens to human beings when they wake up, that some people wake up with so much hatred and they don't think about the other person. How can we reach those people to say to them that, you know, at the end of the day, everybody wants to be loved and appreciated. Everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah. I always say, I said this yesterday at my book event, those who feel the negative energies or they dislike things, they need the love even more. So we need to embrace them more. We need to include them more rather than exclude them. So if someone said to me, oh, I have a friend, but oh, they wouldn't be the type to read this book. I said, actually, please give this book to them. Because that all each one of us needs is someone to push us a little bit to see that opening. And it starts with gratitude. When you wake up in the morning, if you see everything that you have has been gifted to you, it's not I always say, it's not my right to say, oh, no, this is my right as a human being. No, it's my gift that I have received. There's a huge difference. My right is I have the gift of breath. I've been given this gift of breath. To inhale, to give to myself, to exhale, to give to others. So if we see everything in life that we have, even if we're in the hospital, even if we're poor, even if we're in a difficult situation, that this is, there's still the sky. I still see the sky. I still can breathe. I still see the trees. Then we understand gratitude. And once you understand gratitude, that hatred and that discontent that some people feel deeply slowly starts to go down. And you see through the eyes of gratitude that each thing in this life has a purpose, as you do. So each thing is connected to one another. We are, in a way, in one tribe. And that is what consciousness does,
right.
Mindfulness does.
It does.
And that, it does.
For listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mitra Rabha, and she's written a book called The 11 Pillars. It's a personal roadmap to peace, actually, that if you look at it, you will find some sort of a mindfulness that you want for yourself and for the world. And her writings are filled with stories, exercises, practices, poetic prayers, and she gives you the tools necessary to go out there and be the best person you can be in this planet. So Mitra, you credit your writing and everything to your childhood and the way you were raised. With the remaining 3 minutes, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your upbringing in Iran and how it was? Because so many people have such a negative view of the Middle East and its peoples and cultures.
Yeah, I was raised by 4 beautiful women. My parents got divorced when I was 11, and 4 very amazing women raised me. 2 of them had a lion's heart, very courageous, one of them was really very nurturing to me, and the other one had also a tremendous amount of courage. So I was raised by 4 women, and I was raised like with a lot of my neighbors. It wasn't like, oh, just the mother, father, and no, it wasn't like that. The neighbors were all my aunties and uncles, and I was raised with a lot of love. And, you know, I loved and I do love Iran. I felt always the richness of the culture there. I love I loved everything about Iran. So I was raised with love, and I was raised with a sense of self, and I was very connected to the heritage. And my mother always took us trips in Iran so we could see the wonderful architecture and see the wonderful places in Iran. So that's how I was raised.
Yes, and you know, your book, it strikes me as though you have taken the practical wisdom from the ancient and the modern spirituality and the philosophies of what you have brought from Iran and your family, and put it into writing.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I use a lot of mystical terminologies in my book that are from Iran. And I took 40 years of my own teachings and listening and being a witness to people and their stories. And, you know, my mother also had a profound effect on me. She was an amazing teacher and mentor to me. So it is a combination, right? Everything is a combination. It's just like a flower. A flower blooms because of the sun and the water and the earth. And a book also finds its way into the author's hands because of so many components. So this is, yes, something that was gifted to me, and now I am gifting it to others.
Right. And, you know, the path to peace, we can never go wrong learning and executing peace. No one, I mean, I'm Hindu, and it's something when you say namaste, it's the spirit that lives in me, lives in you as well. And we hope that we can have a more kindful, mindful world, United States, and for our children and the next generation, because I think all we can do is learn from the people that came before us and learn from people like you, Mitra, and give back to our world. So can you give us your website one more time and where we can find your book and the name of the book for our listening audience here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends?
Okay, thank you so much, Sita, for giving me this time. The name of the book is The 11 Pillars of Self-Realization, Your Roadmap to Inner Peace, and it's on Amazon. They can purchase it there. It's also on Kindle. And my website is voiceofmitra.com. I have a monthly newsletter that is free. You're welcome to join in, sign up for the newsletter, and that way they will be able to be in touch with me. And I am on social media, and I go by Voice of Mitra, M-I-T-R-A.
Thank you so much. Wow, you make our studio feel so calm this morning, and we feel this afternoon, and we just feel like there's such a calm.
Energy.
Yeah, there's such a calm, wonderful feeling here right now that all of us would like to give back to our world the way you have.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and we'll
thank
make
you
sure
all of you for listening.
And thank
so
our
much.
Friend Jabeen for sponsoring this segment
that's,
as well.
Yes.
And we'll make sure we post all of this on our social media and also a recap of the show, of course. We'll be right back after these messages as we listen to our sponsors with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral. and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. What a calm in studio it is today.
It certainly is. Yes, on 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button, get us on any one of our streaming devices. Or you can wait for the archive of the show, which is also posted there under On Demand. Of course, you want to check out every Monday schedule from 1 to 2 p.m., which is where Viewpoint and with Sita and Friends is posted. And then, of course, it's on all of our social media as well, Facebook, TikTok, all those good things on all the social medias under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, where we post all the shows and the pictures and great interviews that we've had.
And for listeners who are tuning in, on Mondays we sit here and we talk about kitchen table topics, whether someone wants to talk about the environment or saving money or making money or teaching their children about junior achievement. Sometimes we talk to politicians, authors, writers. We bring bankers in, mortgage companies, whatever it is, our show gives you a platform to speak on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And today's no different. We just had Mitra Rabba on, and she spoke to us about peace. And now we have our second segment with Mr. Frank DeMuth, and he's an author, and he's going to speak about his award-winning military book. It's called Off Vital Interest. And there's a connection. He was born and raised in Chicago, and I lived in Chicago for 3 years in Oak Lawn, Illinois. He joined the Army after graduating high school and spent 28 years in the Army. Mr. Frank DeMuth retired from the Army in 2007 and recalled to active duty 2010 to 2012. He is a graduate of the United States Military Academy and currently lives in West Virginia. You're correct, Miss Ellen, with his wife and not one, not two, not three, but four dogs.
I love dogs.
Four dogs and three daughters. So, Mr. Frank, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Well, my goodness, your book, you're winning all kind of awards for this book. And I read it only took you 90 days to write this book. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself that I didn't include. And then we want to go right into why you wrote this book.
Well, I one of the things I left out when I sent the bio in was I enlisted in the Army right out of high school. And when I was a senior, I tried to put a packet together to go to the military academy, but I couldn't get it done in time. So I just enlisted and thought I would go to college after my 4 years. And then I found out, surprisingly, that there's a way to go to the military academy from being enlisted. And so I made it to the academy that way and had a couple years enlisted time before I went. So it was quite an experience. I got to go through basic training twice.
Oh, yay.
Lucky you.
Yes.
Yeah.
and I bet you when you went off to war, like so many young people, you were amazed at the people, the cultures. And part of me is telling me that you don't think that we prepare young men and women to go to war to different parts of the world either. I feel like you learned a lot and you were able to teach us a lot as well.
Yeah, there's so many different aspects to that. We did not previously do a great job at preparing people to go to foreign lands. It's much better now, but it's still there's a long way to go. And the program that I helped develop when I was in the Pentagon, we recruited native and heritage speakers of Arabic, Dari, Pashto, and Farsi, and we enlisted them to go overseas to help support the troops with language and culture experience. And so it was a pretty good program, and it lasted for several years. We recruited over 1,500 people for that program, and I was very proud of it.
Yeah, and the book speaks for itself. The name is powerful, Of Vital Interest, and I'm assuming it's of vital interest to us in the United States.
Oh, it is, and people should not take cultural differences for granted. We need to understand, even if we're going to war, it's very important to understand the culture of the land we're going to.
So the book is about you dedicated the book to the 1,500 immigrants who joined the Army to serve as interpreters and translators. And I'm sure those people had feelings about what they were doing once they got to the country where the war is taking place. Talk to us a little bit about how difficult that was for you to see and hear, and for the people themselves, because they were caught between two worlds and two cultures and loyalties as well.
Well, absolutely. And it's kind of the way our country is designed and built and the way it's become what it is now. We readily accept immigrants and they become part of our country. And throughout the history of our country, when we go to war, immigrants are some of the first people who offer to go because they feel there's a debt that they owe the country for becoming a citizen. And that was kind of similar to what we found when we started a program. And we had no idea that we would find so many people that were interested to go and help. And well, it had to be extremely difficult once they got there because some of them grew up in the countries we were in.
Right, and they still had family. Like in your book, Sergeant Abdullah, he's a trained linguist, he's a soldier and a mechanic, and he's giving everything to serve this country that we love, the United States of America, for giving him a better life, but he's very conflicted once he gets there.
Yeah, it has to be a very difficult thing. And when I wrote the book, I wrote with several of the people that joined the program of mine, and didn't use their names, and no character is exactly one person. It's a combination of several different people, even Sergeant Abdullah's. But there were people that did some of the things that are in the book. So
yes,
it's fact-based fiction, which I found is much easier to write because the higher authorities don't start looking through it with the fine tooth comb, trying to figure out what's there.
Yeah.
So if you write a factual book, it becomes an object of consideration. And two of the books I wrote before, I never got published because they were factual.
Yeah, and so you found that nobody was telling the story. Actually, this is the first time I've heard of an author telling the story of immigrants who are so grateful to live in the United States that they give everything they've got. And, you know, we're watching what's going on right now in the United States with the border and the bill not getting passed and all that. And you saw firsthand how grateful people are to be able to come to this country to a point where they would fight against their own countrymen where they came from in order to be accepted. And so talk to us a little bit. Why do you think nobody else is willing to tell that side of the story?
Well, eventually I think somebody would have, but it takes time for people to figure out exactly what happened. And I had a step ahead of everybody because I would help develop the program that was there that utilized those individuals to support the units. So I had firsthand knowledge of a lot of things that happened. So when I retired, I kept watching and I still didn't see anything. And so I sat down one day and I figured that I would tell a story.
Yeah, so Ellen is looking at the computer and she has a question for you about an award.
Sure.
Well, I see that you won an International Impact Award for in the military category in 2023. So what's the criteria for it obviously was that it was a fantastic story, but was there other factors in winning that particular award?
Well, it was based upon impact globally, not just within the United States, but that there was an impact on others outside of the United States. And I believe when they looked at my book, they looked at people who would want to immigrate and seeing that they would be accepted and their contributions to our society would be acknowledged.
Right.
Yeah. And
I did not personally go, but I look at books like this and I remember stories of my friends going to Cuba when they were able to travel to Cuba, like in the last 15 or 20 years or so. And they said that they would go to museums and so forth, and they would talk about the Americans, but talk about us so poorly in their museums, like up, basically up in lights about how terrible the Americans were. And this book seems like such an impact of the other way of showing, like, where the Cubans maybe even would have had a different viewpoint of Americans, much like what you're doing for the Middle East folks to understand maybe us a little bit better.
Yeah.
As a culture. So it's such a cool thing.
And one of the things that we had to our advantage was that there were a large number of people in the countries we went to who wanted us to help them.
Yes.
So it's not like we were just to a country where everybody in the country didn't want us there.
Yeah. And your book is riveting and it's fast paced. And I think it hooks the reader from what I'm reading. And I am going to start reading it pretty soon. I've got so many books to read, but this one, it is of vital interest to me. I will read it. So I feel like this book should be made into a movie, and I don't know why, but like Tom Cruise comes to my mind all the time. I'm like, have you shopped around to see? I mean, this book took you 90 days to write. You know what you're talking about. It's fiction, but it's also you've got some great stories in it. Have you looked into maybe getting this made into a movie?
I've had several emails. And every one of them has turned out to be not what I wanted to pursue.
Okay, gotcha.
It's surprising that, you know, once you publish a book and once you win an award, all of a sudden there's a lot of people who want to try to make money from what you've done.
That's right. We got you.
And I would love to try to do that, and I think it would make a great movie. Of course, I'm a little biased, but I think the action and what happens, and additionally, it's the first of three books. And I'm about 2 weeks away from finishing the second book in the series.
Oh, congrats.
And it'll be equally as fast-paced and exciting.
Well, it could be on Netflix because it's, you know, somebody's sending these guys these messages. They have to try to figure out who's sending the messages and why. And then somehow they're going to, you know, beat up the bad guys, and which is a terrorist cell, obviously. Nobody likes terrorism, whether it's domestic or international. No one. We all want to beat up the bad guys, you know? So you've got, like, all the elements of a good film in your book. Why not?
Well, and the funny thing that you should mention that is that my book, almost everybody who reads it has thought the same thing. I've had two reviews on Goodreads that weren't exactly good reads.
Yeah. Well, your book is about good over evil, right? And in a time when in the United States we are watching the root causes of war and why people flee. Now, as you wrote the book, did you do a lot of research into why we have wars, why people flee? There's so much, you know, there's a roadmap here too, right? As to why we go to other countries, why we try to take out the bad guys. And as you were writing your book, did you think about these things? Like, we know people flee their countries because of war and famine and lack of resources and drugs and guns and all these things. Did any of those things pop into your head as you were writing the book as to why we even go to wars?
Well, it did, and that's kind of why I tell a brief snippet of Sardin Abdullah's parents and the fact that they left Iraq because they wanted a better future for their family, and they didn't agree with what was happening outside of the government and with the terrorist movements. So that was part of it. And then the other one is just basic oppression and
losing democracy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, I read someplace that enemies prefer to loathe one another in peace, it says, and fighting is simply bargaining through violence. And I thought about that.
Yeah.
I think it's like an old Chinese communist leader had said that. And I thought about that, and I'm like, sometimes they say that we fight in order to achieve peace. And we do. United States have brought peace, you know, all over the world in different countries. And we see the effects of that. When the American soldiers were there in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and all these places, I feel as though the majority of the people welcomed the Americans to protect their democracy. Did you have that feeling?
Well, it is. I think that was true. But the longer you're there, the less the support is. And there's a point when you got to make a decision that things are not going to go the way that you hope they would, and staying there longer just makes it worse.
Like then it becomes an occupation.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what happened in Iraq, in my opinion.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Frank DeMuth about his award-winning novel called Of Vital Interest. So Mr. Frank, talk to us a little bit about what did you learn personally from going to war about the people and its cultures? Because I've had a lot of American friends who fought, and they said, man, the people love to make kebabs and rice in Iraq, and they love to share it with the American soldiers. Did you see any such things of people coming out and welcoming you guys with food and music and dance and things like that?
Well, I think it's any place you go, if you're combating a tyrant, you'll have the same experience. When I was in Kosovo, it was similar. I went there as part of the State Department mission as an observer. And when we would intervene between the Serbian military and police forces in trying to help a regular citizen, it was the same. And it's the same everywhere. And the people want to be treated well, either by their government or by somebody who's trying to help them become a better nation.
Yeah, because I remember reading once when Ambassador Stevens was killed in Benghazi, they said that he used to like to go out without his security into the market and have tea with the people in Libya. That's how much he loved being an American and sharing our culture with the locals. And I always think about that, you know, like how men and women in uniform put themselves in such danger in order to spread our democracy. And in writing your book, you also hoped to inspire more people to join our armed forces. So talk to us a little bit about that, that you wanted people to know that it's okay to join the armed forces in the United States.
And it's okay to go through boot camp twice. You make it.
Yeah.
Somebody's actually lived through it.
Yeah, the second time around was a little easier because I kind of knew it was coming, but I wouldn't advise it.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we have a big issue right now with the younger generation joining the military. And we just don't have the numbers that are needed to support, you know, maintaining the force. And I think one of the biggest problems is so many people just don't understand what the military goes through. And even when we deploy overseas, it's not all fighting. I mean, there's so many hours of not fighting. And then when the fighting happens, it's very intense and scary and things happen, but
yeah, they miss out on the community service part.
They miss out on the food.
Well, the community service and the things that the military does.
So
I'm interested too, by the way. I just let you know that I am a full-time musician. My name is Ellen.
Oh.
We have a Phoenix band, and I hear that you play the saxophone pretty good.
I did.
Okay, so you're more than welcome to come down and jam with us anytime here in Florida.
Oh, cool.
Just pick a time that's not a hurricane season.
Now I'm kind of shifting over to an Emil because I had some issues with my front teeth. And I now have false teeth in the front, and I can't really play a real horn anymore because I can't bite down on the mouthpiece.
Yeah, it's one of the aspects
we'll
of aging.
We'll get you playing something. Though.
Well, you know,
if you're once a musician, always a musician.
Yeah, I'm a long-term care nurse, so I certainly understand that. So, Mr. Frank, before we leave, we have 1 minute left of this segment. The path to peace. Can you tell us, what do you think is a path to peace for our world, its people, and its cultures?
Well, it's all about leadership. And if we can ever reach the point where leaders are content with what they have and not interested in gaining more, our world will be a much better and safer and happier place.
Wow, that's powerful. And your second book is coming out in August, you said?
Yeah, it'll go to the publisher in about 10 days. I'm just finishing up. It's called Defending the Eagle.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and talk to us about a soldier's perspective and about the people that fought for this country and all the things you saw.
And Frank,
it's been an honor to be here, and I've really enjoyed it.
So don't forget to check out Frank's book, Amazon.com, and a whole bunch of other places, FrankDeMythAuthor.com. You can also purchase the book as well. We'll make sure we share it on all of our social medias, as well as our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And thanks, once again, a fantastic episode here of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, tune in each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510. WWBC.